Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it's your turn. Tell us about the story you picked.
I picked a story called It's Such a Beautiful Day by Isaac Asimov. I read this story. I have this little book from that I read 30 years ago, literally 30 years ago. When I was a kid, I was reading this little book of science fiction stories. And in my memory, I was like, oh, it's some nobody author, like random writers that just got into a little anthology, one-off kind of print thing. And I've had it ever since, just floating around on my shelves. I was like, I should grab a random story out of there. So I went to the table of contents and it was like, oh, this isn't nobody authors. It's got Isaac Asimov, it's got Arthur C. Clarke, it has that Theodore Sturgeon story that we did, The Man Who Lost the Sea.
Oh,
It has a
yeah.
Richard Matheson story in it. And I was like, okay, so my memory of this story book is not correct, but it is just it's this tiny little book, like this tiny little nothing thing, but it was just the collection of some of these big name, maybe at the time it was printed, they weren't as big as they became, but they definitely have survived.
Okay, cool. So you rediscovered the book, and do you remember this story or no?
I remember this story and I don't remember any of the other ones. This is why I picked this
Okay,
one out of it. And I
cool.
very just vaguely I remember the premise of it. Like the door broke. And that was about it. So I didn't remember very much.
Okay, cool.
Miss Elizabeth Robbins was distressed. Little Dick Hanshaw had always been a good pupil. She hated to report him like this. And yet, she told herself, his actions were certainly queer. And she would talk to his mother, not to the principal. She slipped out to the phone during the morning study period, leaving a student in charge. She made her connection and found herself staring at Mrs. Hanshaw's handsome and somewhat formidable head. Miss Robbins quailed, but it was too late to turn back. She said diffidently, Miss Hanshaw, I'm Miss Robbins. She ended on a rising note. Mrs. Hanshaw looked blank, then said, Richard's teacher? That too ended on a rising note. That's right. I called you, Mrs. Hanshaw. Miss Robbins plunged right into it. To tell you that Dick was quite late to school this morning. He was? But that couldn't be. I saw him leave. Miss Robbins looked astonished. She said, You mean you saw him use the door? Mrs. Hanshaw said quickly, Well, no. Our door was temporarily out of order. I sent him to a neighbor and he used that door. Are you sure? Of course I'm sure. I wouldn't lie to you. No, Mrs. Hanshaw. I wasn't implying that at all. I mean, are you sure he found the way to the neighbor? He might have got lost. Ridiculous. We have the proper maps, and I'm sure Richard knows the location of every house in District A3. Then, with the quiet pride of one who knows what is her due, she added, Not that he ever needs to know, of course. The cords are all that are necessary at any time. Miss Robbins, who came from a family that had always had to economize rigidly on the use of its doors, the price of power being what it was, and who had therefore run errands on foot until quite an advanced age, resented the pride. She said, quite clearly, Well, I'm afraid, Mrs. Hanshaw, that Dick did not use the neighbor's door. He was over an hour late to school, and the condition of his flexies made it quite obvious that he tramped cross-country. They were muddy. Muddy? Mrs. Hanshaw repeated with the emphasis on the word. What did he say? What was his excuse? Miss Robbins couldn't help but feel a little glad at the discomfiture of the other woman. She said, He wouldn't talk about it. Frankly, Mrs. Hanshaw, he seems ill. That's why I called you. Perhaps you might want to have a doctor look at him. Is he running a temperature? The mother's voice went shrill. Oh no, I don't mean physically ill. It's just his attitude and the look in his eyes. She hesitated, then said with every attempt at delicacy, I thought perhaps a routine checkup with a psychic probe. She didn't finish. Mrs. Hanshaw, in a chilled voice, and with what was as close to a snort as her breathing would permit, said, Are you implying that Richard is neurotic? Oh no, Mrs. Hanshaw, but it certainly sounded so. The idea, he has always been perfectly healthy. I'll take this up with him when he gets home. I'm sure there's a perfectly normal explanation which he'll give to me. The connection broke abruptly, and Miss Robbins felt hurt and uncommonly foolish. After all, she had only tried to help, to fulfill what she considered an obligation to her students.
What's the one, the Ray Bradbury story, like There Will Come Soft Rains?
Yes. Yes.
There's something about all of these sci-fi stories that sound like they're written by the same person, but I think it's like the humor that's in it too.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
not
That's a little
just
bit of
like the
that.
content. Yeah, it's like, I don't know.
I mean, Bradbury is much like stylistically more florid, I think was the word we used in that. Yeah, but there is definitely some similarities there. And like that point of view, that kind of humor, that irreverence, maybe some kind of weird irreverence.
It is. Or it's like, I mean, what's funny here is how the teacher is trying to be polite and the mother's trying to be polite, but they're both doing what we call here in Ohio, like the Midwest nice, which is like,
Yes.
Everything I'm saying on paper is correct and proper, but you can tell by the way I'm saying it that I don't mean it, you know?
Yeah.
And there's like, there's a humor there about it.
Yeah. The characters, he's definitely, that's what I, one of the things I like about this story is it's not just about the interesting science, you know, the door, the future world. It's the people. And he's putting like certain social realities, contemporary social realities into the future and kind of showing them playing out in that unusual circumstance. So we can laugh at it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like that, all of that is relatable. I thought it was interesting too, because I found myself kind of waiting in this story for some larger authority figure to swoop in and get this poor kid in trouble.
No, like Harrison Bergeron or something.
Yes. Well, I mean, because it feels like the type of society that I think there's one mention of how this area came to be and how they, you know, they have the most advanced technology. They've all decided to go about using these doors and not going outside.
It's the extension of what, like, at the time he was writing, the development of the suburbs, right? So it's like gated community that he's imagining there, basically.
Right. So they have some kind of like wealth or whatever, or power, but it seems like the only way places like that work is if there's someone in charge kind of forcing it along the way. I mean, anyone that joins a gated community, like after the fact that it was formed, you know, those are always like the new X Factor residents that maybe want to upend it. And here we have a kid that's like kind of coming of age, so he could be considered one of these like new residents, and he's like thwarting this system. And I was like waiting for him to like accidentally lead some kind of like uprising where the rest of his classmates want to, you know, like want to mess around outside. And I kind of like that it was a quieter story that way. Like we just have the mom, the teacher, the boy, and then the psychologist.
Yeah.
And it's not really about whether or not what he's doing is going to get him in any kind of bigger trouble. It's just kind of like looking at this personal decision that the mom has to come to terms with. Yeah. And then, but I think this reminded me a lot too of the other story that we read where it was like about the kid whose brother dies in the weird farming
equipment. The John Gardner story, Redemption.
Yeah. Like what kills him? It's a weird
The Cultivacker.
Yeah. I remember like having to Google that and being like, this seems key to the story. And then he goes on to have what's arguably like the kind of takeaway of that story with a character that's not introduced until like the final act. And it's like this older male, like figure who teaches him how to play the French horn. And that seems similar here, where we don't meet the psychologist until the final third of the story. And it seems like his decision to step out into the world on his own at the end is kind of like the point that this is a guy that considers himself to understand, or at least he's made it his life's work to understand other people's motivations, right? And it's only in seeing this boy that's like thwarting these norms that he realizes that he doesn't even necessarily follow his own motivations, you know? He's very much against like these machines that do the labor for him, and yet he's just like let it all kind of happen. So I felt like that, I mean, the little boy, you could argue, is like the least dynamic character of the whole story, right? We see him on day one just change. He's like, no, I have to, I have to walk, and I like it. He never got the chance to walk, or else he might have always liked it. And it's like the mom and the teacher and this and his little doctor at the end who are like, wait a second, he might be on to something here.
That's the ending, right? That's where the psychiatrist is like, it's such a beautiful day.
Yeah. And he's like kind of lying to himself when he says it. He's like, no, I think I'll walk. He's like, I'll be fine. I'll figure it out.
I do like that last scene where the kid takes him outside and shows him around. And he's like very trepid, you know, and he's like, wow, I wouldn't have imagined it looked like this out here.
Yeah. What's funny about even that is, I mean, you just said that the kid takes him out, but the doctor takes him out. The doctor says, I got an idea. How about you and I go out?
But
and
I meant like, the kid who's showing him around.
Yeah. The kid ends up almost immediately being like, he's like, you go outside. He's like, well, sometimes. And he's like lying to himself and everyone.
Yeah.
And then the kid immediately is the tour guide. And the guy's like, yeah, when I said I went outside, I meant 30 years ago.
Like, he knows what a river is supposed to look like. And the kid's like, that must be a river. And he's like, oh, that's not a river. It's more of a creek. So he's remembering. He's like, oh, yeah, it was kind of cool out here.
Yeah.
I do have these vague memories of being outside.
It felt like, and I don't really agree with this, but like the closest thing this felt like in terms of sci-fi that we've encountered would be like COVID, where people really just did not leave their homes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But even then, I mean, we were in Florida, right?
No.
People were not just leaving their homes. They were doing everything. But like there was like sort of this weird thing where it was like you would go from one safe place to another, like, right? Like your home to your car, and you can relax in your car. And then like your car to like wherever you were going to go, you weren't going to be safe there though. You had to have your mask on. And then it's like, I mean, I remember I felt like best just like walking around my neighborhood where I never saw another soul, and everyone left me alone, and it was wonderful.
I think I mixed up in my mind this story, my memory of it, because I remember the doors and like not going outside. But I think there must be another story in this book where something like climate change or like the sun's expansion or something had like ruined the atmosphere. Maybe it was a nuclear holocaust or something, and people just didn't go outside because it was bad for you.
Yeah, actually unsafe.
Yeah. So in this, in my memory, I put those two together. So I was kind of waiting for, when I was reading the story, that kind of moment where they explained why nobody went outside as like a environmental reason rather than just a, we got used to using technology. Because, you know, the story is kind of about like, it's got all these machines that are taking over aspects of our lives. And like, they have the mechano that like the little robot that does things for them. They got other things. And like, even the psychiatrist is like, has this whole spiel about how machines are taking over ordinary human experiences and activities. And that's why he kind of has that inkling like, oh, maybe I should take the kid outside and see what he's feeling, like why he's doing this. Like, is he enjoying it for some reason? Because it's getting him away from that. And that seems to be the only reason that they don't go outside anymore, is because of that technology, because that technology allows them to just like skip the outside rather than there being some other kind of impact, like nuclear war, you know, fallout or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I did feel like I was assuming that there was some kind of a backdrop like that, whether or not it was like explicitly stated, like you said, like that they had determined a long time ago that it was unsafe, because that's even how the mother talks about it. They're baffled by the fact that he can navigate it. When in the bit where you're reading here, it's like he comes home muddy, and they act like that is just evidence of like horrors.
Muddy.
Yeah. So it's like they are afraid of something, but they don't like explicitly say like what it is and like how they all determined that was a thing. And that's why, like, if anything, this also felt like a, like sort of a class story, because the way the mom and the teacher are talking to each other, we don't know much about the mother or like whether or not this kid has like a father figure, you know, in the picture. Yeah,
that is interesting. There's no father in it. She's, the mother's referred to as having like some sort of breeding, like, I forget the exact wording.
The snorting, but it's like, thing. It's like she did the closest thing. Approximation or whatever to a snort that her breeding would allow.
Yes.
And it's so rude, because like those interactions felt like these class interactions where it's like the teacher may or may not live in this area, but she's following these rules because she works almost in a way for these people.
But she's worked her way into that class, like not into the class exactly,
society,
but she's part of that. And they talk about how like in places in other parts of the world they don't even have doors.
Yes.
Like, how could these live like that?
Yeah, so there seems to be like the wealth thing.
Yeah.
And like usually it is, I mean, the only example I can think of is like food or something, where it's like the only people that can afford to shop like 100% organic because we've decided it's better for us or safer are like the richest of rich. And it seems like, even though it's not explicit, that's like the undertone here, is that like they've decided that this is not for the best, it's not safe, or it's like good enough for other people but not for them if you can avoid it. And now they're rich enough to like live in this area where they don't have to worry about it. It's interesting too, because I think if this story were done today, there would almost have to be an element of like the climate fiction that we read a lot in sci-fi now. And it seems the opposite of kind of what that would be about, because the cli-fi genre is very much about like preserving natural earth. And this seems to be like, you know, natural earth is like this thing that we have to deal with. It's not even necessarily like killing us yet. It's just dirty, but it's supposed to be dirty. Yeah. You know, it's supposed to be nice and natural and beautiful. Like they said, like the one day the kid kid comes home and it's raining. It's like, that's fine. Unless it's literal acid rain and the kid's skin is like sloughing off. Like, I think it's okay. But they're kind of acting like, they're acting like the natural world is disgusting. I'm like, not yet. It's not disgusting yet. This feels like if it was written today, that would be this underlying tone, which would be that like, it is not safe to go outside.
That's interesting because at the time he was right, he would have been writing this. It was like the nuclear fear, right?
Right.
People were worried about World War III and what happens after a nuclear exchange. I know that the science hadn't really, they didn't know as much about like nuclear winter and that kind, those kinds of effects that like kind of developed as the decades passed. They started, you know, figuring out these things, but there was definitely a fear of that after World War II because we'd just seen nuclear bombs used and all this stuff. And the war, this giant world war had just happened, like it seemed inevitable. So it is interesting that he doesn't use any of that in this, that this story is more about how technology is going to firm up these class divisions. Like it's such a different world than you would expect him to have made, right?
Yeah.
For the time. And even for now, like, you know, and obviously there were those fears at the time about like, every new technology always brings in this like, oh, it's destroying our world. Like, you know, Socrates didn't like that writing had been invented because he's like, now people aren't going to be forced to memorize things anymore. They're going to be able to just read them off a piece of paper. No one's going to learn. People are going to be dumb from now on. So, you know, it's been going on for millennia, but that kind of fear of technology is not fear. He's not expressing a fear of technology, but more of a downside.
Right.
This is actually kind of related to what's going to be my takeaway. The way I think about the story is like, he has this idea about doors and then he just kind of like, okay, what if people stop using the doors to get, and then somebody goes outside. And so he comes up with these characters to kind of explore the situation. But his world building goes so far beyond that. He has to create the whole society in which these doors are being used. And like the stuff we talked about incorporating class ideas in there, like how does wealth impact these doors? How does, you know, the teacher's background growing up poor and then trying to enter into this world as she's gotten older, even his mentions of like faraway countries that don't use doors and how they live. It's all part of like, it's not just, I came up with this cool idea for technology. It's how does that technology impact like the entire structure of society and the world and everything that goes on. And that it's such a short story and small, but it's so vast in the kind of the depiction of what these technology has done to the world that he had to think through all those different parts of it. Like that is like the key to world building. It's like figuring out how small changes, and you get this really a lot in science fiction and fantasy, obviously speculative fiction, is like small things that you want to kind of explore. How does that impact just the structure of the world? Mm-hmm. And that's world building. It's interesting that I don't think we've really talked about that in any of these stories we've done, but it just struck me in this one how it feels almost throwaway. It's like the story is about a kid who doesn't want to use the technology anymore and he wants to play outside, right? Which is just, every kid wants to play outside, but it's, you have to build a world in which that becomes a focus. And his ability to create that world so with such detail and yet presented in such a small story is just great. So that is actually going to be my takeaway when we get there. But anyway, and all this stuff we were talking about kind of is related to that.
Yeah. Now all I can think about is like my own takeaway, but
oh, that's fine.
I mean, like he does like world build and all of that, but I like going back to like kind of what we were saying, where this is the decision to use these doors is never like clearly articulated. We don't know if it's because world has become unsafe or because they are afraid of like nuclear war. It's never like explicitly stated. And because of that, feels like it could exist in different time periods, you know?
Yeah. I always just assumed just reading it that it felt like cars, you know, there's no big decision. Like we're going to use cars now.
It's just more efficient. Just,
people invented cars. And now you can get place to place faster. People invent doors. You don't need cars anymore. So you don't even need to walk outside anymore because you can just go through these doors. It just feels like an evolution of an effect of the technology rather than being a decision that people made. Somebody figured it out. And now, although the car thing doesn't always work because a lot of laws had to be passed to make cars more usable in cities. And like the jaywalking was invented in the 30s because people were like, we gotta drive our cars, but people are walking on the road. So they invented jaywalking as a crime. And even New York City, they had so many horses around the city that there was just this constant haze of like dust and particulate manure that was just floating above the city. And they said, in order to clean up the city, we need to adopt cars at a massive scale.
My God.
So people stop using horses because it's so dirty. So they started adopting cars and using cars instead. There's a whole campaign about clean up the city, buy a car or something like that, you know, but that's not like you were talking about, like some centralized authority that made that decision. That's just like the culture just decided we want to clean it up. We want to do this. We've discovered this new technology, so we want to pursue it.
Yeah. I guess like my point in just like pointing it out again, though, in terms of a takeaway is just like for all the world building that he's done, you still don't necessarily need to know everything.
No, you don't need to know everything.
To accept. And I think that's like an important kind of thing to point out. Like, I don't know that people run into this necessarily, but I imagine it is a difficulty of this genre in particular, where if you're inventing a world, it's like sci-fi or fantasy, any of this kind of stuff, you do want to think through definitely all the implications of whatever reality, but you don't necessarily need to tell us how you arrive there. And that's like the beauty of this kind of storytelling, is that you can just plop us into a place, and as long as you make it believable, like we'll be along for the ride. So it's only, I think, like in reading about this and like maybe discussing it ad nauseum like we do, that we would point out we don't really know what's going on here definitively, but there is enough of this world building and enough of the character development and all of those dynamics that make it believable and then allow us to kind of, you know, suspend our disbelief to just get to the point of his story. And this story is not about why the world decided to stop using the outdoors.
Yeah.
It's not really about that, but there's enough there that we can probably have a guess. And maybe he'd be one of those frustrating authors that said, well, I don't really think it through. I don't know. I don't have an answer for you, you know?
Oh, Isaac Asimov probably had a thought.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, maybe he did and it's just not on the page, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, but the point being that we're not supposed to spend all of our brain power on coming up with that answer. We're just supposed to enjoy what's on the page.
That's an interesting, because where world building really comes to life is in details. Like every time the story reaches into something, there are details there that define the world around it, around where we're looking, where the story is taking us and pointing things out to us. But it only needs to point at things that it cares about.
Right.
So the story doesn't need to care about how we got here. The story cares about the fact that we're here and what the implications are of being here and the fact that this kid is thwarting the system and what that entails. So that's where it's focusing its lens. That's where it's focusing its details.
And I wonder too, just given like that this was probably the overarching theme of those days, like you said, like this like nuclear fallout or whatever it was, like if it was like an intentional choice not to include it, not to include mention of why they're doing this, like if a reader of that time would just be able to just go with the flow of this story and kind of accept it at face value. The same way when there was COVID fiction coming out, the few and far between shitty stories that we read, you didn't have to explain and you didn't have to name even the disease. Like we were of a time that we were primed to just accept that there was something happening in the world that required us to use masks or not shake hands, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like you didn't have to explain it because we were already like primed for that.
A lot of the genre at the time was just forward looking. It's like, what is the world going to look like? Because they're thinking about technology. They're thinking about post-apocalypse if there's nuclear exchange. They're thinking like the Bradbury story we read years ago now. And the Harrison Bergeron even, like what happens in the future if they pursue this line of thought about making everybody equal. It's just all about what's going to happen in the future. And this story feels more like what will technology do to us if we keep developing technology? So it's not merely, I don't think, just like nuclear worry, but that's part of it, right? That's so for a lot of stories, like the apocalypse has happened because of nuclear whatever, but others are just, we're thinking about the future. We're just thinking about the future. What does the future world look like?
Right.
It's almost, I would feel like it should be almost a little more difficult than like somebody like Tolkien, who invented a whole secondary world. You don't have to base it on anything. I mean, he did, you know, there's difficulties there, but projecting forward and making it believable for like where we are now, there's a certain complications in that.
I'm just flipping through and I saw another section where the mom is stressed about having to like call the school and ask where her kid is. And this is after she like already defended her son's lateness or whatever it was, like to the teacher, right? Because the teacher's like, I'm worried about your kid. Mom's like, There's nothing to worry about. And like, meanwhile, she's like, oh shit, I knew it. I was a little worried, but now I'm like 10 times as worried because the teachers noticed. And I'm worried for all the implications, like socially, but also I do think there's something very wrong. And then there's like this hand wringing about whether or not she's going to call a doctor. And yeah. Like, that seems of the time, too. But it's also interesting that the conclusion being that there's nothing mentally wrong with this child. He's not unstable. If anything, you could argue everyone else is for having this irrational fear of the outdoors, you know? What is that called? That's called something.
That's right. It's interesting, I think, that that concern over the doctor felt very much of like the 50s. You know, yeah. There's 50s, 60s. The rise of psychiatry in that part of the century, a lot more people were going to see a psychiatrist, but there was still a stigma to it. Right. And so like that conversation in her head about it was very much of the time too. And, you know, he pushed that forward into his built world as well. You know, yeah. Like what's going to become of that? It is interesting.
Yeah, because I don't know. It felt like a concern of the time to wonder if you needed to go see a doctor and like what that yeah. doctor would do or say. But it also seemed like a little progressive for the doctor to then conclude there's nothing wrong with your son. Like, even though he's thwarting all these norms of the day, even yes. though he's embarrassing you on several different levels yes. and scaring you, and even though it takes him now an hour to come home from school every day, like actually he's fine.
There's a cool irony in this, in that we as the audience recognize what he's doing. He's like, he's being a kid. He's going outside, yeah. he's walking around, he's doing stuff.
Exploring
the world. But the characters in there find it unusual and strange.
This is a fun one. I mean, like, if nothing else, I don't know that I'll necessarily remember this story. Like, it didn't make me feel anything necessarily.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't
it's that. It's not a bad thing.
Well, you kind of cheer for the psychiatrist at the end. You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Go for a walk. Enjoy it.
Yeah. Or maybe I'm like cheering for like nature.
Yeah. Makes me want to go outside.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to just imagine it, but it was cool enough to kind of like read it and to think through all the implications of that. Maybe that's a good kind of takeaway too. Like, cause we talk all the time about how, like, if you don't like sci-fi, maybe it's because you think that it's all about these kind of like what if scenarios that are extremely far-fetched and like, who cares? But we always talk about how with any genre, the strength of the story is in like the human experience. Right.
Oh, and this definitely has that.
This has that, but also it's not necessarily one that pulls at your heartstrings. You can still enjoy it at the face value level of this premise. And it's cool to just kind of think through it. So that's what this one was for me.
Yeah, that irony I was talking about kind of creates a little distance. I think that might be why we don't necessarily identify or feel as strongly, because there is that distance between us and the character. We're judging the mother from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're not really with her, if you will. Or even, and the kid's told in such a way that it's more mother point of view than it is kid's point yeah. of view. So even if we want to side with the kid, we're not like in his head. We're not feeling the world through him. It does kind of like undermine its emotional potential in that way.
But that's, I think, also like I brought up the Ray Bradbury story, but that one was definitely emotional. But this one is very much like it's not supposed to be about that.
Yeah.
I think this genre is mostly about like, oh, the what if and the weirdness and the anyway, I guess that's it. All right. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Naples Writers Workshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.